Like many across our country and around the world, I believe the person the Republicans have nominated for president cannot do the job.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Resistance Recess. By the time you get to hear this episode, the recess will be over. And here's the way it goes. This is the first recess that Congress takes, you know, after the new year. All right, it's February recess. They generally take it connected with President's Day. And nothing is supposed to happen during this week legislatively, because the entire point is to send your legislators home, send your representatives back to your home state, because they belong to you and they're supposed to be working for you. And it is time that they hear from you. So there's been a whole lot of guess what happening. Absolutely nothing. There's no purpose for this past week other than to meet with you, the constituents, and Republicans. It's Republicans, I can say it, by and large, that are running scared. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 196. My name is Melvin. Thank you so much for being here. So there were some town halls before this week, where Republicans were starting to notice how things were going at their town halls. They noticed that the amount of people showing up was increasing, and those people were getting more animated. And those people, when they asked questions, they seemed to know what the hell they're talking about. Oh, crap, you know what this means? This means that we have an educated populace. And this is something that the Republican Congress simply cannot have. Look, here's the way it was supposed to go. The Republicans are supposed to win the election, both houses, including the White House. Then they're supposed to spend the next 8 years running roughshod over the American voter, screwing them out of their house and their car and their education and their health care. And then we're supposed to bring a Democrat in to fix it all up so that some dumb Republican can knock it down again in 8 years. That's the way that this is supposed to go. When Donald Trump was elected, Republicans said, we need somebody who's going to shake things up, who's going to disrupt the apple cart. Well, it appears that bringing him in, along with a favorable Congress, what that has led to is the American voter shaking things up.
I have been blamed by Republicans for a lot of things, but being blamed for their primaries and who they're selecting for their party is novel. The Republican political elites and many of the information outlets, social media, news outlets, talk radio, television stations have been feeding the Republican base for the last 7 years, a notion that everything I do is to be opposed, that cooperation or compromise somehow is a betrayal, that maximalist, absolutist positions on issues are politically advantageous, that there is a them out there and an us, and them are the folks who are causing whatever problems you're experiencing. And the tone of that politics, which I certainly have not contributed to, I was the one to prompt questions about my birth certificate, for example. I don't remember saying, hey, why don't you ask me about that? Why don't you, you know, question whether I'm American or whether I'm loyal or whether I have America's best interests at heart? Those aren't things that were prompted by any actions of mine. And so what you're seeing within the Republican Party is to some degree, all those efforts over a course of time creating an environment where somebody like a Donald Trump can thrive.
Not just thrive, but get elected, get a favorable Congress, and now Congress is running scared. Alex Thompson over at Vice.com, the headline says it all, duck and cover. And that's essentially what's happening right now. They are ducking and covering. We're going to get to my representative here in a moment. Oh, man, I can't wait to talk about her. So this, according to Vice.com, just to give you some perspective. For the first 2 months of the new Congress, the 292 Republicans have scheduled just 88 in-person. That's important. In-person town hall events. And 35 of those belong to one representative, and that's Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, according to a tabulation by Legistorm. Write that down. Legistorm. It's a fantastic resource for following this kind of thing. In the first 2 months of the previous Congress, by contrast, Republicans had held 222 in-person town halls. So what kind of thing are they doing right now? Well, they're doing a Facebook Live, which doesn't really allow you to ask questions. Or they'll do a town hall over the telephone, which allows them to ignore your questions. See, they don't want to hear from you. Yeah, they got in. And they got in with a small margin, if they got in with a majority margin at all. Like the president most certainly did not get in by winning. You know, he lost by 3 million votes. The House got fewer votes for Republicans than for Democrats, and still the House is run by Republicans. But even with that, they believe that what they have is a legislative mandate to do whatever the hell they want. And they don't really want to hear from you. Representative Mark Sanford of South Carolina told Vice News that he thinks in-person town halls are important. This is a Republican. Particularly getting out of space you control and getting into space that's neutral. What happens in politics is that over time, you can get increasingly insulated from people that have a strongly held point of view that's different from yours, he said. Sessions like town halls are not a good substitute, he said, because oftentimes they will screen those calls and those forums can be manipulated. Republicans have been trying to say that all of these people that are pissed at the Republicans, not really pissed at the Republicans, they're being paid to be pissed at the Republicans. Quoting here, Republicans who get roughed up at their town halls have taken to dismissing the attendees as professional organizers. Jason Chaffetz, who got hollered at by a crowd when he went home, they were telling him to do his job and to give up his health care, since he very much would like to snatch their health care away from them, called his hostile crowd more of a paid attempt to bully and intimidate. This was, of course, echoed by the White House press secretary, Sean Spicer, who said that recent marches and protests against Trump are a very paid AstroTurf-type movement. Here is the truth. And I think you know this if you follow this show at all. And that is, this is almost certainly either a direct result of the election of Donald J. Trump along with a favorable Congress, or this has a lot to do with the Indivisible Movement, indivisibleguide.com. I have 3 jobs, and even with that, I decided to start a local Indivisible group because it's just, I can't sit still. I don't watch TV. You know, I don't watch a lot of sports. This is my hobby. This is my thing. And so when I heard about the Indivisible group, I said, hey, yeah, I'm already involved in all these other things politically, but why not take this up as well? Because, you know, sleep is for the weak. One of the reasons that Republicans don't want to hold town halls is because one of the things that the Indivisible guide tells you to do, it tells you to go to the town halls. Make phone calls, but it tells you to be respectful, it tells you to be dignified, and it also tells you to record everything. And it says that Republicans are afraid that when they're confronted with their BS, that some of those recordings, interactions, are going to become memes. And it's going to become the way that people tend to think about Republicans and the Republican Party. And yeah, that's exactly what we're going for. And of course, that's why they're running scared. So where are the Republicans this week if they're not meeting with their constituents like they're supposed to be? Well, the hell do you think they are? They're meeting with millionaires and billionaires and raising money so that they can run for Congress again. Yes, I understand. And every time there's an election, they come to you and they got their little hands out and they say, can we have some more? Can we have some money? They don't give a rip about your money. They do, however, need your vote. They're getting money from the big donors. Okay? They don't care about your money. When they ask you for money, they really just want your email address so that they can hammer you with their emails. And then they would very much like you to vote for them because, see, billionaires can pay for the election, but billionaires, well, one person, one vote. Billionaires can't cast extra votes, so they still need your vote.
Corporations are not people. Money is not speech. We can afford to educate our young people. We can afford to give quality health care. We can afford to clean up the environment. We can't afford to seize our own destiny. You will have the opportunity to do things greater than you can possibly imagine. And now is the time. We need an American spring this spring. We need to occupy democracy in the United States of America.
That was former Vice President Al Gore giving the keynote a couple years ago he was given this. Forgive me, I don't know what college he was speaking at, but I like what he said there. He said, democracy spring. And hey, we are currently coming out of winter and going into spring. And I have never seen my people more active than I have seen them right now. Over at Salon.com, they are officially calling this resistance recess. And this is what we should point out to our representatives. Hey, you need to meet with us. You need to talk with us. Because if you do not do so, we will replace you. According to the Town Hall Project, which collates information about public town halls, Republicans are running scared right now as lawmakers return home to their districts to find constituents upset about the plans to repeal Obamacare without a clear initiative. We'll get to that in just a moment. Republicans are discovering that holding the reins of power may not be all that's cracked up to be. And then this, for me, is kind of the kicker with this whole thing. There is a PAC, a political action committee, called We Will Replace You, that is threatening to launch primary challenges against any incumbents who are seen as too wishy-washy when it comes to Trump. Senators such as Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and Joe Donnelly from Indiana have all been singled out by We Will Replace You. Joe Manchin comes from West Virginia. West Virginia was very heavily carried by one Donald Trump, probably because of the coal industry. But even still, we are saying to these wishy-washy Democrats, we will replace you. And to the Republicans who don't want to hear from us, who don't want us to talk to us on the phone, don't want to return our calls, don't want to return our emails, don't want us to come to their offices and meet with them, don't want to hold a town hall and talk to us, you are about to get replaced.
First he said he would do it. Then he said he wouldn't do it. Then he said he would do it. Then he said he wouldn't do it. So I would hope that if he's changed his mind 4 times in 2 days, change it a 5th time. You know, Trump claims to be a real tough guy, pushes people around. Hey, Donald, come on up. Let's have a debate about the future of America.
Remember that during the primary where Trump said that he was going to debate Bernie, and then he didn't, and then he did, and then he didn't. The Republicans are good at slogans, right? They're good at holding, these campaign style appearances where people show up and cheer their name. But what they're not used to is disagreement. What they do not want to hear is from you if you do not hold their exact same position. They have this idea that they can represent less than half of America and still hold power. Oh, we're going to change that. All right, so we're going to meet my representative.
Thank you for calling the Vancouver office of Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler. We are unable to get to your call right now, but if you leave your name and number, we will get back to you as soon as possible. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
So then it does nothing, and I go, okay, well, all right.
Your call is being transferred.
There we go. I want to be switched over. Switch me over. Come on, talk to me, Jamie. This is Jamie Herrera Butler, Southwest Washington. Not taking my call. And this is what everyone's getting right now. Just ignore, pass you around. You know, they just... And this is what they think they're going to do for the next couple of years. It's a House member.
Thank you for calling the Vancouver office of Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler.
Oh,
we are currently on another call or have stepped away from the front desk. Your call is very important to us.
Of course it is.
If you'd like to leave a message for the Congresswoman, please leave your name and phone number and a brief message.
All right, let's
Thank
do that.
Thank you so much and have a great day.
All right, cool. Hey, let's leave a message.
Sorry, you cannot leave a message now because this mailbox is full. To transfer to another extension, press *8. For assistance, please wait or press 0 now.
And then, of course, if you wait, you just get passed around again, and absolutely nothing happens. And they just keep running you in circles. This is not my first time calling my congresswoman. I have called her office before. I don't ever get a response, and I think she knows that I don't like... And I don't call her and tell, Jamie, I don't like you. But I call up and I say, hey, Why do you think it's a good idea to repeal the ACA, knowing that it's going to cost women more money for health care than it does men? Because in the ACA, it says that you cannot do that. Hi, Jamie. I have a pre-existing condition, and you'd like to see the ACA get repealed. That's pretty fantastic, because I'm not going to be able to find health care, and I may just die, and my blood may be on your hands. Okay, don't say it like that. I didn't say it like that. But I call up and I say, hey, why? Why is it okay for you to have health care coverage, but not me? Things of that nature. I mean, just keep it honest. I've been trying to make a call for some time where I actually get on the line with somebody that works for her, or even better, her. Because see, it's not enough to just sit around and complain. You gotta call, you gotta show up, and you most certainly have to show up on election day. And now, the Republicans, after complaining for 8 years, Obama's not listening to us, representatives aren't listening to us, when, by the way, remember, they were holding town halls, right? People were showing up and screaming at them, too. But now that it's us and the Republicans are in charge, now who's not listening?
Obama's not listening to anybody but his own arrogant, radical self. And that's sure. where the problem comes in.
I'm speaking with myself, number one, because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
Uh-huh. And he's not listening to anybody either. I want to arm you with a few more things that you can ask your representative about, just to see where they're at. There haven't been a whole lot of bills signed by this president. One of them has been a bill that allowed General Mad Dog Mattis to serve. Because there's a rule that you have to be a civilian for 7 years before you can get back in the position that Mattis wanted to get into. But they passed a rule creating a one-time exception for Mattis, and that was signed by the president. Fine. Then there's another one called the Surface Mining Stream Protection Rule. What the hell does that mean? So this was a rule about the waste that is created from coal mines. And what it essentially says is you can't dump your waste in our rivers and streams and all the rest and just bury it, and because it's toxic. You have to take care of it the right way. So what did the Trump administration say? They said, well, the regulation of having to get rid of that stuff and do it to dispose of it the right way, to do it in a clean way, to do it in a way that doesn't kill people or pollute the environment, well, that's just going to cost a lot of jobs. So what they did was they got rid of that rule and said, do whatever the hell you want. Lakes, streams, rivers, bury it, burn it, who cares? This is, it's almost like we don't even share the same planet. And they did it in the name of profit. They say coal companies are going to be a lot more profitable now that they can do this. Let me address that for just a minute. Yes and no. So right now, they won't have to pay to clean up their coal waste ash. They can just dump it in lakes and streams now. But if they had to dispose of it the right way, that wouldn't kill a job. That would actually create a job, because somebody would have to figure out how to clean it up and dispose of it properly and then come along and do that job for them. Yeah, whoever owned the coal mine wouldn't make $100 million that year. They might make $90 million that year, but then it would be disposed of properly. But money is the name of the game, even if that is at the expense of our health and environment. If you'd like to ask your representative about that one, that is the stream protection rule. That's what they got repealed.
I was just in Indiana last week, where United Technologies threw 2,100 workers out on the street, moving to Mexico, where they're going to pay people $3 an hour, after giving their former CEO a $171 million severance package. I would love, as president of the United States, to be on the picket line with the United Steelworkers. That's never happened in American history. And I think I would love to be on the picket line with the communication workers of America, the CWA, who are taking on the greed of Verizon. Okay? And a president can galvanize the American people against the economic injustices, the racial injustices that are currently existing in America. That's what I would love to do. Now, if I do not get elected president, are we going to continue the movement and work with our allies? Absolutely, we will.
They always frame this issue of getting rid of regulations as it's going to protect us, as it's going to save our jobs, but it has absolutely nothing to do with that, clearly. And yeah, Bernie, the movement he was talking about right there, it is still happening, because it's not just the indivisible movement, it's also our revolution.
When we look at climate change now, we have got to realize that this is a global environmental crisis of unprecedented urgency. And it is not good enough, you know, if we, God forbid, were attacked tomorrow, the whole country would rise up and say, we got an enemy out there, we got to do something about it. That was what 9/11 was about. We have an enemy out there, and that enemy is going to cause drought and floods and extreme weather disturbances. There's going to be international conflict. I am proud, Wolf, that I have introduced the most comprehensive climate change legislation, including a tax on carbon.
Whenever there is a mass shooting, what we always hear is, stop looking at the guns. It's not the guns, it's the mental health, right? That's what we're always told. You need to look at the mental health issue. Do something about the mental health. Do something about mental health. So, this is another thing that has been passed by both the House and the Senate, and it has to do with guns. Specifically, it has to do with making sure that the mentally ill get armed. And this is one of those bills that actually passed with some Democratic help. So I'm going to read directly from Newsweek here. By voting to revoke a two-month-old Obama administration gun regulation that prevents certain individuals with mental health conditions from buying firearms, the measure now moves to Trump, who is expected to sign this into law. By the time this show comes out, he may have signed it into law. So here's the way we measure who's too mentally ill to buy a gun. The Social Security Administration finalized the standing rule in December under President Barack Obama. With the regulation, the SSA must identify and report to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, NICS, individuals who are unable to work because of a severe mental impairment and can't manage their own Social Security benefits, and thus make them ineligible to buy guns. It's not an insane bar. It doesn't strip anybody of their God-given right. The thought is that those certain Social Security recipients could pose a danger to themselves or others. And it passed the Senate 57-43. Yes, it passed with some Democratic help. Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly, Joe Manchin, John Tester. These are all Republicans that are definitely going to be targeted when their re-elections come up. We have this because in the wake of the Virginia Tech massacre, you may remember this, a gentleman, I use the term loosely, killed 32 or 33 people at Virginia Tech. I still can't see the Virginia Tech logo without thinking about that massacre, and it happened 10 years ago. But Republican President George W. Bush signed the NICS Improvement Acts of 2007 to ensure individuals who are deemed unqualified to possess guns due to mental health or other reasons could easily be identified through NICS. A Virginia court had ruled that the Virginia Tech killer a danger to himself, but the state hadn't submitted his case to NICS before he was able to buy firearms and fatally shoot 32 people in April of 2007. So this is another thing that was likely voted on by your representative, especially if they're a Republican. And what it specifically says, not explicitly, it says that the mentally ill people should be allowed to have weapons after all these years of telling us that we've got to keep the hands, you know, got to keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill people. Right? Everyone else gets a gun. Mentally ill don't get guns. This law says you're stigmatizing mental illness by not giving them a gun. You're treading on their God-given Second Amendment right that the founders, because the founders said that we want the mentally ill to have guns. And how dare you try to take guns away from the mentally. Come on, you guys. Reality, not a strong suit for these folks. And then, of course, the NRA backed the bill. Why does the NRA back this bill? Does the NRA really want more shootings to happen? Yes, they do. Because that's how the NRA makes money. The NRA is not a gun safety group. The NRA is a lobbyist group of the firearms industry. So what's going to happen in the immediate aftermath of another mass shooting? Well, a couple things are going to happen. Obviously, there's going to be a whole lot of people getting buried long before their time. The next thing that's going to happen, a vigorous debate about guns. The third thing that's going to happen, if it's not the second, is the president, Trump, will come out and comfort and coddle the gun makers and say, don't worry, guys, we're not going to do anything about your precious guns, right? And then there's going to be a further debate. And then what's likely going to happen is gun sales are going to go through the roof. Ammo sales through the roof. Because the name of the game is, and always has been, money. Not public safety, anything like money, money, money.
If Bernie Sanders and the socialists had their way at 90 tax corporations at 90%, we wouldn't have the iPhone with 130,000 times Apollo technology in your hand.
So
because
hot.
No one would take the chance and try and develop it. They do it for the profit motive.
And that's what we're constantly told, that everything is and should be done for the profit motive. And that if it were up to Democrats and their regulations and their safety features and their warning labels, then nothing would be happening in America and nothing could be further from the truth. We are not better off. We are sicker. We are broker. We are more afraid. We are not better off. We look at our neighbors with suspicion and scorn. And for what? This is another one that you should hit your representative with. Point out to them, hey, is it really a good idea for the mentally ill to get guns? Really? How did you vote? Go to Legistorm or go to opensecrets.org. There are any number of watchdog websites that will tell you exactly how your representative voted. And by the way, do you know who your representative is? If you do, good for you. Man, I'm so glad you do. But if you, hey, if you don't know, come on now. How long you been listening to this show? Is this your first day? Man, get on there. Okay, call up, go online, find out who your representative is. It's not that hard. And by the way, they work for you. You're giving them a paycheck right now. And if you're giving them a paycheck and you're not cooperating with them or you're not communicating with them, well, then they're getting a whole lot of money for nothing. And if you're not telling them what they should do, there's a very good chance they're acting only in their own self-interest. Man, find out who they are. Give them a call. Hey, but be nice. They'll be nice to you. That is, if they take your call.
The blame of the shooting lies in the hands of those individuals that conducted this ambush and this assassination. I think all of us in public life, president included, should re-examine everything we've said, everything we've done up to this point to see if in our public discourse we've contributed in any way. But ultimately, the responsibility for what happened in Dallas ultimately lies in the hands of these individuals whose motivations we don't yet fully and truly and entirely understand.
That was in the immediate aftermath of the Pulse nightclub shooting. And I like the fact that he mentioned the president there. I imagine after we get our first major shooting, mass shooting, with this new president in office, right before he goes and gives handy jibbers to all of the gun manufacturers, I wonder if Republicans will have the same kind of words of caution for him about his words.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick, her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
Do you remember that? Do you remember during the election when he was calling for the killing of Hillary Clinton? And of course, he tried to say, his people tried to say, his apologists tried to say, no, that's not what he was doing. He wasn't calling for the murder of Hillary Clinton. But I don't know any other way to interpret that. Maybe the Second Amendment people can do something. It's insane to me. Calling for the murder of your opponent. Also, calling for your opponent's emails to be hacked. Murder emails. Murder hack emails. One of those two things actually happened. He called for the Russians to hack into her emails. And guess what happened? He called for her to be murdered. Well, okay. That one didn't happen. But how irresponsible is that? And what are we going to hear out of our representatives the next time a mass shooting does happen?
I've been very critical of Donald Trump, but I actually don't think that's what he was saying. I think he was suggesting that the Second Amendment advocates across the country might be able to come together to pressure the Senate to reject her nominee should be, she become president. That's how I interpreted it. But it is an example of Donald Trump's looseness with language that can lead to interpretations that, such as the one put out by Secretary Clinton's camp.
That looseness with language is a particular concern. And by the way, this guy is still a threat to national security. We've learned recently from an article that came out on the Wall Street Journal that the intelligence community is withholding a lot of information from this particular president because they're afraid that he will leak it to the Russians or some other group because he's got such a big mouth. And it's pretty clear he's got some deep connections to Russia. He's also still using his unsecured Android phone, which means that at any time somebody could hack into his phone and take over his Twitter account. Now, that kind of concern, say 15, 20 years ago, wasn't even a thing, but you have to move with the times. And here's why that's important. So someone takes over his Twitter account. What does that mean? Well, let's think of it this way. What happens if somebody takes over Melvin's Twitter account? Well, that might be a little bit embarrassing, but Melvin will get over it. Melvin's not a super high-profile guy. Let's say that somebody takes over your Twitter account, assuming that you're not a celebrity or something of that nature. And even if you are, it's a little embarrassing for a little while. You clean up the mess, you do some interviews, and then everything is a little bit better. What happens if somebody takes over Donald Trump's Twitter account after they were able to hack into his unsecured Android phone? Aha. Well, anytime the president tweets something, the markets tend to go up and down. If he says that he wants to give some business to a particular telecom company, their stock is going to go up. If he says something about, say, Sweden, well, Sweden is going to respond. And here's the thing. I played an audio clip here on the show of Ronald Reagan when he was about to do a PSA. And he said into the mic that we're going to begin bombing, you know, in 5 minutes. Bombing Russia in 5 minutes or whatever it was. I can't remember what it was, and I don't have the clip handy right now. And then it immediately put us on a war footing when that audio leaked. It was a joke. He said it into an open mic. He shouldn't have done it, but it was a joke. What happens if somebody gets into his phone, hacks his Twitter account, and begins threatening the world, threatening our enemies, threatening our allies? By the time we get a handle on that, we could be in the middle of any number of mass casualty events. But Donald Trump doesn't care. And the reason why is he wants to have that direct line to the nitwits and morons that support him. And he has that with Twitter. If he's given a secured phone, he can't connect to the outside world with it, which means he can't run his Twitter account, which is clearly more important to him than the security, than the national security of the United States. They want to give guns to the mentally ill. We have a mentally ill person as president. And then think about this. During the campaign, when it looked like Hillary had a pretty solid chance of winning, Sean Hannity, who really, 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 really wanted Cheeto Hitler to win, said, "What can we do to make Hillary look bad?" He decided to say that Hillary clearly has a mental illness. There was a video where she got tapped on the shoulder by a reporter and she whipped her head around and she almost bumped into the reporter and then she pulled her head back and it could have happened to anybody and it was absolutely nothing. But Hannity decided to take that video and play it on a constant loop and say, "Look, she's clearly mentally ill. We cannot have her as president."
Let me go back to this video, Dr. Siegel, that's on the screen now. We'll put it up again. I mean, it's a violent, violent, repetitive jerking of the head here. Now, you know, you can see it's uncontrollable. Watch the reporter, like, pull back as the reporter got scared, and she keeps doing it. What is that?
It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. But they tried to say that clearly there's a mental health issue there. She can't be president. But giving guns to the mentally ill, and of course having a mentally ill president, oh, that's cool. Because now that person's a Republican.
What more does he need to say to prove that he is not fit to be your nominee?
This from NewYorkMagazine.com. Republican senator admits that the GOP health care plan has to remain secret because it will be unpopular. For so long we've been hearing repeal and replace, repeal and replace. But like the dog that caught the car that he was chasing, they have power and they have now caught the car and they have no effing idea what they're going to do. This from NewYorkMag.com, Jonathan Chait over there. Republican opposition to the ACA or Obamacare has always been premised on comparing an actual law with its compromises and trade-offs to an imaginary alternative. Republican ad promises health insurance that provides more choices and better care at lower costs, provides peace of mind to the people with pre-existing conditions. House Republicans have a plan to get there without disrupting existing coverage. The ad ends telling viewers to learn more at abetterhealthcareplan.com. But when you visit the site, it's just a big video of the same ad that you just watched and two brief sentences of text. There is a plan to get there. The House Republican health care plan lowers costs, provides more control and more choices to pick a plan that meets our needs, not a plan that Washington mandates. The Republican plan turns out to consist of an assurance that is not an actual plan. The Republican Party, faced with a catastrophic real-world consequences of repealing the ACA, is divided on how to proceed. Some nervous Republicans want to figure out what they want to put in place of Obamacare. Senator Mike Lee insists that Republicans repeal Obamacare first before they decide on an alternative. And his reason is straightforward, that if people saw the Republican alternative, they might not like it. Quote, there's a lot less agreement about what comes next, he tells reporters. If we load down the repeal bill with what comes next, it gets harder to get both of them passed.
I think that the for-profit private insurance industry is definitely part of the problem. And as you said, they don't add much. They take away, they cost a lot of money, but they don't add, they don't give anything back. The reality is that nations that have single-payer public systems spend much, much, much less on billing, on administration than we do. The waste is enormous. One study points to upwards of $400 billion a year that would be saved if we were to transition to a single-payer system more like Canada's.
$400 billion?
That is correct.
So Trump was giving a campaign-style speech recently down in Florida, and he said that something terrible happened in Sweden. There was a Sweden incident because they've been letting in all these immigrants. Sweden, oh my God, my dear sweet Sweden. Sweden goes, what in the hell are you talking about? Then somebody from the Swedish government decided to figure out where Trump gave that speech. And they figured out, you know, the city in Florida where he was speaking from. They went ahead and got the crime statistics from that area, just that area that Donald Trump was talking to or speaking in. And they decided to compare it with the murder rate of the entire country of Sweden. And then they pointed out and eventually tweeted out, because that's the language he speaks, that there were more murders in just the area that Donald Trump was speaking in than there was in the entire country of Sweden last year. And that he should take a look at home before he starts complaining about other countries. And you know what Sweden also has? Sweden also has that sweet, sweet universal health care. And that's the kind of thing that we're not allowed to look at. Anytime we do something in America, our politicians especially, it's not done because it's the right thing to do. It's not done because it's a good idea. It's not done because it's beneficial. It's done because it's going to make somebody money. So last week I pointed out that Time is calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump. It's a little early, but they make a pretty strong case for it. And now the op-eds are rolling in. One of the strongest ones that I have seen so far comes from Leonard Pitts Jr. And it minces no words. It says right there, Mr. President, just who the hell do you think you are? Quoting here, let me explain to you how this works. You want a minority of the popular vote with a little help from your friends, FBI Director James Comey, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and the bottom line is that you were elected, though. And this does entitle you to certain things. You get your own airplane, you get free public housing, you get greeted with snappy salutes, and a band plays whenever you walk in the room. But there's one thing to which your election does not entitle you. It does not entitle you to do whatever pops into your furry orange head without being called on it, or should it run afoul of the Constitution without being blocked. You and the other members of the Fourth Reich seem to be having difficulty understanding this. 3 weeks ago, your chief strategist, Steve Bannon, infamously declared that the media should keep its mouth shut and just listen for a while. Recently, senior policy advisor Stephen Miller declared on CBS Face the Nation that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see as we begin to take further actions that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and should not be questioned. Whoa! Shall not be questioned what you do. Will not be questioned. Lord have mercy. That's the kind of statement in another time and place that would have been greeted with an outburst palm and a hearty Sieg Heil. Here in this time and place, however, it demands a different response. Who in the hell do you think you are? You're not an emperor, Mr. So-called president. You're now what is called a public servant, in effect an employee with 324 million bosses. And let me tell you something about those bosses. They're unruly and loud, long accustomed to speaking their minds without fear or fetter. And they believe power must be responsible to the people. That is at the core of their identity. Yet you and your coterie of cartoon autocrats think you're going to cow them into silence and compliance by ordering that they shut up and obey? Well, as a freeborn American, I can answer that. In two syllables flat, hell no.
Donald Trump says he'll make America great again. It's right there. No, it's stamped on the front of his goofy hat. You want to see Goofy? Look at him in that hat.
The purpose of this program, especially in this time and place right now, is to see to it that you don't feel powerless. So much of what has happened in post-election, and there was an article that came out from any number of sources in this past week that pointed out how many people are feeling anxious, how many people are feeling fearful, you know, how many people aren't getting good rest at night, and any and all the rest, how many people are super duper stressed out about the election. And a lot of that stress tends to come from feelings of powerlessness. And if you are a progressive person in this country, or even if you are a thoughtful progressive Christian, you are fearful right now. If you're concerned about your fellow man, if you're concerned about your country, you are fearful. And you don't, and I try to say this every show, I don't want you to be. And I understand that that seems easy for me to say, because I simply open this mic and I say it. But you need to find a way to help yourself mentally. And I'm not trying to tell you what to do or how to live your life or in any and all the rest, but you need to find an outlet. So for me, by and large, that outlet has become this show. I hit this mic, I say what's on my mind, I can get it all out, and I know there are people out there listening. I get responses, I get praise, I see the download numbers, and I know that people are out there, and I can hope. That I'm helping somebody, right? That I'm getting some good information out to you. I don't want you to feel stressed. I don't want you to feel cynical. I don't want you to just throw up your hands. I want you to understand that even though this seems to be a stressful time, it seems that things are not going in our direction. But here's what we did with this most recent election. We decided to just let our country go. I think a lot of people became complacent after the election of Barack Obama. And it was pretty easy to become complacent because we put a black guy in the office. And we're pretty damn sure we're going to follow it up with a woman. I mean, just the progressivism just coming out of this country, just coming from all corners. And it looked, yay, right? And I did great under the Obama presidency. But I stayed engaged because this is my interest. A lot of people who don't have an interest in this and don't necessarily see a reason why they should remain engaged, well, they went ahead and checked out and just said, whatever, take care of itself. we elected a black guy. Country's not that bad anymore. You know, it's the KKK, they don't really have a footing anymore. What? An authoritarian? Nah, don't worry about it. Donald Trump, man, that guy will never be president. And I said the same thing, too, because I, too, got complacent. I, too, overestimated the intelligence of the American people and just assumed that they could see through this shyster, see that the emperor has no clothes, and not vote for this guy. And then 62 million people turn it out and voted for this guy. And although he didn't get a majority, any number bigger than one is too damn big for me. You know, and once you start getting to 2 and 3 and 4 votes, man, holy hell, is our intelligence on fire? Is it evaporating? What happened? So what can you do? I don't blame you if you go to a corner of the internet where you find some like-minded people, right? And you share back and forth stories, thoughts, concerns, you know, fine. You know, just don't become so insulated that you don't notice what's going on with the rest of the world, especially the rest of the world politically. If there's people that you know that are willing to hear you out, just talking about this stuff can make it better. Because, yeah, it seems like it's going to be a tough couple of years. But it might only be, and it's up to you, the American people. Is it going to be a tough 2 years or is it going to be a tough 8 years? Donald Trump has already registered to run for president again in 2020. So in 4 years, he's already registered to run for president again. So he would like to drag this clown show out for a very, very long time. And he would like to leave a whole lot of destruction in his wake. So how long that goes for is completely up to you. And I say we might even be able to mitigate the damage and get it down to only a year or less. Because for the 2018 elections, the Republicans are going to have to spend, all of 2018 raising money and making appearances so that they can run for office again. And all of this stuff that's happening right now where people are calling up their representatives and they're showing up and they're marching in the streets and all the rest, I think that Republicans are hoping that this stuff will just die down and that next year they'll be able to run for office and get in front of all of these crowds that like them a whole lot, and they're not going to have to deal with a lot of hard questions, that they're not going to become internet memes. And You and everyone else need to make sure that you stay engaged and that you stay a part of the game, because that's the only way we're going to get it done. Now, don't look around and say, well, you know what, all these people, and it seems easy, right? You look around at all the indivisible groups, you look around at all the marches and protests and all the rest, and it'd be pretty easy for you, especially if you don't want to talk to your congressman. You're nervous about talking to him or whatever, you're not sure what to say, you know, you're afraid it's going to make you feel dumb if you talk to him because, you know, God, man, they're a congressman. What am I going to say? Well, congressman, well, they work for you. What are you going to say? Say whatever the hell you want, but be respectful, be polite. Tell them what you think. Share your concerns with them. They're supposed to be working for you. And it would be easy to just go, you know what? Everyone else is doing it. I ain't got to worry about doing it. Just let these guys do it, right? And then what happens? 2018 comes around. Republicans keep both houses. Trump gets even stronger. Maybe he gets larger majorities. And then what? Oh, crap. I should have stayed involved. Well, you just made it go on for a little bit longer. You need to get engaged. And stay engaged. Stay engaged the whole time. Look around. These people, they're with you. And they're not just Democrats. They're not just progressives. They're Republicans too. They're conservatives too. Some of the states that will be hit the hardest by the repeal of the ACA are the red states. Those states are going to suffer really more than anybody, because right now, California and New York are both looking at single payer. I know Oregon has looked at single payer. I know Washington has looked at single payer. Eventually, everyone's going to have it, and it's the deep red states that will not.
The one thing I would definitely say is, let's not call them the alt-right. They're white supremacists. I mean, the fact of the matter is, the alt-right is just their way of rebranding. They weren't called the alt-right 4 or 5 years ago. They were calling themselves racialists, race realists, identitarians, and enough's enough. They're white supremacists, and we need to recognize them for that.
There's a group of people that are never, ever going to come along with us. They're always going to be on board with this guy. They're always going to be on board with the white supremacy. They're always going to be on board with the destruction of America and racism and all the rest. Fine. We're not going to be able to bring those folks along. But I believe in my heart of hearts that even though those people played a large role in getting Donald Trump elected, What played a much larger role are A, the people that did not turn out, B, the people that did turn out but decided to cast a protest vote because they're both just as bad, harumph. Come on now. You got to get out there. You got to get involved. You got to stay involved.
We need smart, steady, principled American leadership. And part of leading wisely is seeing threats clearly. Remember Ebola? That was a serious threat, and we took it seriously. In the midst of it, there was hysteria. Flights must be banned. Quarantine citizens. These were actual quotes. Seal the border. And my favorite, remove Obama, or millions of Americans die. That's an actual quote. The thing is, when we panic, we don't make good decisions.
We also tend not to make good decisions when we merely follow blindly. There is a story over at Unilad.com. The headline reads, "Priest feeds congregation rat poison to prove that they are above death. They all die." Quoting here, "Priest tried to prove that his congregation were above death by feeding them rat poison, and the results were, of course, predictable. Priest Light Monyeki from South Africa took it upon himself to prove his followers were superhuman and immortal with a seriously dangerous stunt. The priest declared to his congregation that they should not fear death, for they will not die, before he proceeded to pour bottles contaminated with rat poison into their mouths. He said, 'We do not need to proclaim faith because we are believers and death has no power over us.' And not surprisingly, they all died. There's now a police investigation because of this, but it helps me make a larger point. There's more of us that disagree and are working against the president. There's vastly more of us than there are of them, those who are blindly following. CNN was recently doing some interviews with some pro-Trump people and saying, hey, after all this, are you still pro-Trump? And the thing that came out of these people's mouths was absolutely, utterly insane. And they don't care. They're behind him no matter what. Slugs for salt all the way. And when Donald Trump comes to them and asks them to drink the rat poison and tells them that, dying from drinking the rat poison is an alternative fact, they're going to go ahead and happily drink the rat poison. But the rest of us absolutely are not. I'm hearing a lot of folks super excited about, you know what, maybe we can just impeach him. And yeah, you know what, if you impeach him, here's what you get. The next in line after him is Vice President Mike Pence, a white male. After that, Speaker Paul Ryan, white male. After that, Senator Orrin Hatch, another white male. After that, and this is the Presidential Order of Secession. After that, Rex Tillerson, boy, he's just as awful too. After that, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, another white male. After that, Defense Secretary James Mattis, another white male. I've noticed something about this administration. And this isn't an accident. And then after that, Jeff Sessions, another white male. After that, Kevin Hogred or Ryan Zinke, if he's confirmed, of course, both white males. You have to go all the way to the 13th or 14th person in succession to be president before you find somebody who is not a white male supremacist. It's an insane list. So what we need to do is quit focusing so much on that. The idea that we're just going to impeach this guy and everything's going to get better, because all the people down the order of secession, he has helped pick them all, and they are all equally awful, and they are most certainly not the United Colors of Benetton. It's nothing but white males from here as far as the eye can see. Not everybody hates the new president, though.
The other thing he says, he's always calling me Little Marco. And I'll admit, the guy taller than me is like 6'2", which is why I don't understand why his hands are the size of someone who's 5'2". Have you seen his hands? They're like this. And you know what they say about men with small hands?
So between that thing that was said during the campaign, which became pretty big, and the fact that Donald Trump seems to brag about how huge everything is, and the fact that Donald Trump is anti-science, this from IFL Science, Tom Hale, says, "The Donald has received the honor of having a new species of moth named after him, Neopalpa Donald Trumpy. It's a blonde-haired moth with small genitals, and it has now been named after our president. totally unrelated to the moth's namesake, the new species has a strange blonde thing on top of its head and tiny, teeny tiny genitals. The golden-haired species has been described this week in online journal ZooKeys. With a wingspan of 7 to 12 millimeters, these moths can be found around the future location of the Great Wall of Trump, Arizona, California, and Mexico's Baja California. And then, of course, just to piss him off, they went ahead and tweeted out to him, "So I named the species after @DonaldTrump. Maybe now he'll make conservation of our fragile U.S. ecosystems a priority. Maybe, maybe not."
It's a dangerous time for Americans. We need a president who can grasp the complexity of the world and hold off the decline of a great nation.
I want a president who will keep me and my family safe.
I want a president who can handle the economy.
That's why we want to talk to you about Donald Trump.
If the White House phone rings at 3 a.m., would his little hands even pick up the receiver?
How can he create jobs if his hands are too small to shake on the deal?
When he decides to launch his nuclear war, will his stubby fingers even be able to push the button all the way down?
America deserves his hand measurements.
It's time our country learned every inch of the truth. So we've launched Americans Against Insecure Billionaires with Tiny Hands PAC.
Go to DonaldTrumpHasTinyHands.com to sign our petition.
Together, we can learn if Donald Trump can truly handle being Commander-in-Chief. Paid for by Americans Against Insecure Billionaires with Tiny Hands PAC and not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
We have wit on our side. We have humor on our side. And yeah, I know things look dark, but don't get sad. Don't get cynical. Don't be depressed. And most certainly, don't feel powerless, because this is far from over. And the impact that we are having right now on this administration, on his cabinet, and on the representatives that were supposed to merely be a rubber stamp Congress that was going to give him every damn thing that he wanted, we're holding them back. We're slowing them down. And that's the best that we can hope for right now. But it's very effective. Understand that. If you look around, just walk out on the street, just look at all the people right now. There's a very good chance that 5 out of 7 of those people, holy hell, do they agree with you. My God, do they agree with you. They're right by your side, and they will march into battle with you, because that's where we're at. It's unfortunate that it took this kind of event to get people to finally get involved and stand up and to, quite honestly, be where I am at every single year, no matter who the damn president is. But it's nice. It's nice that we're all here. And don't forget, it's cool. It's cool to go ahead and use humor. And it's cool to go ahead and use juvenile humor. Because this guy is a juvenile. And this stuff really, really bothers him.
Genital size does not matter, at least when it comes to fish. Apparently size doesn't matter when it comes to the size of a male fish's genitals, according to new research. Females don't find males with big genitals any more attractive than those with normal or small genitals. Someone needs to let Donald Trump know he would be happier as a fish.
Ah, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Man, go do something. Come on now. This is your country. Take it back. You can like us at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store, at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, is just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. We will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. And by the way, thank you so much, Kevin. Hey, I know you're out there. You're going to school right now. You're getting your education. You're getting your learn on. I know it. And I want to thank you for continuing to help me with the show after all these years. Your help is absolutely invaluable. I call you a friend and a producer, and I do so with pride. And I want to thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.